Okay, hi everybody, I'm Susan, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi,
and thanks for having us here today. It's always a privilege to be able to speak to a group of compulsive overeaters because I know where you came from, I know what you do every day, I do the same things, and it's just great that we have decided to change our lives and do what we do and self-reflection and all that kind of stuff. So I'm very happy to be here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you my story, and then, as Colleen said, we're going to continue working on this, and we're going to work on it through the steps. And, you know, when I came in here, there was this guy. I used to go to day meetings in West Hollywood. Gosh, they're not even there anymore at the log cabin. But there was this guy who had like 25 years, and he would sit at the meetings and he would go, "Every answer to every problem you have is in this book." And, you know, I just hated being in L.A. at that time. And everything was just like, "Oh, please." And I would just sit there like this and go, "Oh, really? You know, is the answer to world peace in this book?" You know. And, you know what? I have to say today, 21 years later, I think it is. I think it is. I think every answer to any question I have, to any problem that I have, I can find this in this book. And it's kind of amazing to me that I have today a set of directions on how to live my life. And I used to complain that I didn't, and that's why I fucked up so much probably. And now today I do. I have a set of directions that kind of tells me how to live and how to be. But I'm going to focus on body image today. And I was born into, and the atmosphere that I was born into really set me up to have to scrutinize my body. Before I was born, before my parents were married, my father wanted to go out with my mother, and she wouldn't date him because he was too fat. And so he went into the army, and 6 months later, he lost 100 pounds, and he came back, and he asked her out again, and then 6 weeks later, they got married. So kind of tells you about where I come from. Even today, my mother, God bless her, has Alzheimer's, and I walk into the room when I visit her, and the first thing she does is look me up and down. First thing she does. And when she stops, I'll probably be worrying really about that she's lost her mind totally. But for today, that's what she does. So my abstinence date is October 26, 1986. I came in here size 18, not even 5'2", so it's pretty big size for me. Let's see, the weight came off quickly and then slowly. That's what happened for me. And my abstinence is black and white. I want to put that plug in there for that. It has never changed from the moment I got abstinent to today, and God willing, it won't ever change. It's as black and white as sobriety is to an alcoholic. And because I can do that, because I do that, I'm able to have a life today. So just wanted to say that. So my obsession with food started when I was 4. I can remember the exact moment it happened consciously that I became obsessed with food, and I wanted more of something, and nobody else in this group did, including adults. And I just thought about it for the rest of the day that I wanted that food and I couldn't have it because I was too embarrassed to ask for more, even though it was offered to me. So when I was 6, I started being made fun of because of my size. And at 6, I started hating my body. And, you know, today, or as an adult, I've been around 6-year-olds, and it just kind of breaks my heart. You know, these are little people. And I had those thoughts about myself from then on. I would hide behind things so you wouldn't be reminded of what I look like, so you wouldn't call me names. and from then on, just constantly looked at people who were thin or normal, really, just normal body size, and just wonder how come they were like that and I was like the way I was. At six, I don't think that I equated it with food. I probably didn't. But I know that we used to get weighed in school every year, and from the moment school started, I would just be in terror. Is the nurse going to come in today? Is she going to do it today? Because what she would do is we'd all line up, probably according to height. I was always the second shortest. And we'd all line up, and then we'd walk over about 10 feet to the scale. She'd bring the scale into the room. She'd weigh you and then shout to somebody else who was, you know, like 5 or 6 feet away from her, how much you weighed. And I always weighed the most of the girls. And like I said, I was the second shortest. And I don't know that anybody else in my class ever to this day remembers how much I weighed. But I do. I remember every year how much I weighed. And it just was horrifying for me. And also, the crazy thing was, is that, like I said, you know, I anticipate this from the beginning of the school year. She always came in May or June. Every year she came in May or June. But I just, every time I saw her, I freeze. And is today the day that she's coming in? I was put on my first diet when I was 10. I was gone for the summer, and I was staying with my grandmother up in upstate New York. And my mother didn't see me for a couple of months. And I was pretty free up there to eat what I wanted. And bless you. And I ate what I wanted. And when my mother saw me, she kind of went, she went crazy. She went crazy about what I looked like. You know, sometimes I hear people talk about, they'll say, you know, I see pictures of me when I was a kid or a teenager, and I looked at myself and I thought I was so fat, and I wasn't at all. But that's not my situation. I was always big, and just getting bigger. So I went on that diet. It lasted 5 days. I lost 5 pounds, and probably lost those 5 pounds quickly because I put it on in the summer quickly. I was also 10, and I moved around. I walked a lot more than I do today, and moved around a lot more than I do today. So. So I lost it, and from then on, I just always expected every time I went on a diet, I should lose a pound a day. And that was a great setup for me to fail on diet also. But what also happened was, from that time on, was, so every day, I'd wake up and think about what my diet was going to be that day. From age 10 on. And, that's what I thought about when I'd wake up in the morning. There weren't that many choices then. You could be on Weight Watchers, or you could do my mother's diet, which was take a slice of bread off your sandwich and eat hard-boiled eggs. So that's what I did. I hated my size, and I hated me for having it. And I would buy clothes that were too small for me because I didn't want to buy something that had that number in it, the size. So I bought tight clothes, you know, or else I didn't wear them. I just would have them hanging in my closet. I remember years ago, my sister, she lives here now, but she would come out here. She lives in New York and would come out here on business. And my sister was in the clothing business, and, you know, just was always interested in what I had or what I was wearing. I don't know why. I wasn't. You know, she was the fashionable one. And so she would come, and she would go into my closet to look at my clothes. And I would stop her and just get really angry with her because then she would see other sizes of clothes that I had. And my sister was kind of lanky. She was just born lanky, you know, just straight up and down. And while she had her issues about being straight up and down, you know, again, I would just think about her whenever she was in my presence. I was just obsessed with how come she got that body and how come I got my body, and just think about the unfairness of it all, and how much I hated myself. And I guess I want to just state the obvious for me, that what I think about my body is all up here, because when I got here and when I got, I didn't get abstinent right away, but when I did get abstinent, the peace that I had about my body was unlike anything that I ever had before, and I certainly was at my top weight when I got abstinent. So I know that it's an inside job. I know it. And what else do I want to say about that? Just because I had peace about my body and accepted it didn't mean that I didn't want to lose weight. It just meant that I didn't hate myself, and I just had more of a loving attitude about myself. And that made a big difference to me about what I ate and how I looked at what I was eating, as opposed to thinking that I was depriving myself all the time. Now I was loving myself, and it made a very big difference about that. But when I came to OA, what I really wanted was to be able to eat whatever I wanted to eat and still lose weight. That was my goal in every diet that I ever wanted, that I ever went on. I want to eat whatever I want and lose that pound a day. And then when I didn't lose that pound a day, the diet was done. And, you know, I would blow the diet at night and, you know, eat whatever I wanted. And my compulsion to eat was just so huge that I know I really understood the word powerless when I came in, when I look back on those nights that I'd be alone. And, you know, like every appliance is going, I'm sobbing because the food is not cooking fast enough, even in the microwave. I'm biting into frozen food, and I don't know why. And I can't stop myself. And I know that my friends are not living like this. I know that they're out there having a life, doing something else, and I am like a prisoner of my house, because all I want to do is hide. I want to hide this horrible body that I have, and I want to eat. And I thought of my body like it had done something immoral, like it had done something bad. And I had no respect for it. I only had hatred and disgust for it, and blamed it for my unhappiness. What I didn't see was that I also used my body for setting boundaries. I had no sense of what a boundary was. I never even heard the word until I came in here, honestly. I grew up in a violent house where certainly I had no choice about what was going to happen to me or not. I had been molested by our family doctor. You know, who is more trusted than that asshole? But he was. My mother would be sitting in his office. I'd be in the examination room, and he'd be molesting me. So I used my weight for, and this was just in my mind, again, for separating myself from you, from boundaries, especially when it came to guys and things like that, and, you know, sexual stuff, whatever. I used it. It didn't stop people from asking me out, you know, by the way, like I thought it should be. But in my mind, I couldn't go out with them because I was too fat. And, you know, it's so weird. I mean, you know, Colleen and I were just talking, well, I was just talking to Colleen about, you know, people say if you want to know what America looks like, you go to Disneyland or Mall of America, you know, and you see that we are an obese country. We're an obese country. And let me tell you something, those obese people, they're married, they have kids, they're living their lives, but me, no, because I had that boundary. I used my body because I didn't know how to say no. I didn't know that I could say no. That was really the big difference, that I didn't know that I was able to say to somebody, I don't like what you're doing, you have to stop, I don't want to do this, I don't want to go there, whatever. I just thought that I just was like, you know, the sacrificial lamb to anybody. So I used my body in that way, and I didn't even appreciate that until I came here and really learned to have boundaries and learned to be able to say no. And I think that was one of the reasons I was able to eat less food, was because I didn't have that need for it anymore. And, you know, so the funny thing is that today I do get to eat whatever I want. But what I want to eat today is totally different than when I wanted to eat 21 years ago, you know, because I have tools today to live. I have the steps. I have people that I actually talk to and share things with. And I just got a text from a friend of mine who is at the I usually go to the kitchen sink meeting. It's my home meeting. And she said, somebody just said there, and I never heard this, Kalina heard this, share it or wear it. And, you know, for me, that was a lot of, I ate at people, I ate when I was angry, that was a lot of what I did. I ate when I felt embarrassed, I ate when I felt ashamed, and today I talk about things. You know, I came from the no-talk zone, and, you know, we just didn't talk about things at home. I was supposed to feel good all the time. I was supposed to have a smile on my face all the time and not feel bad. If I felt bad, I was accused of being a sheep, following everybody in school, you know. I mean, just kind of insane stuff. But I believed all that stuff that I was told. So, I came here, and what I saw, for the first time in my life, I saw people actually who felt good about themselves. We call that word serenity. Who knew what serenity was, you know? I mean, I had heard the serenity prayer growing up, you know, kind of, I guess we all hear it, but I had no idea what it meant. But I would come to meetings, and I would hear people who actually felt okay with their lives and knew how to handle situations that maybe used to baffle them, you know? And so I started doing what they did. And I had sponsors who were very loving. I've only had three sponsors, and my present sponsor I've had for, I think, about 16 years now. But my sponsors have been very loving people and very accepting. And what they all encouraged me to do was be honest and be vulnerable. And, you know, honestly, the first time I heard that word, you know, my sponsor saying, just be vulnerable. And I was, like, disgusted. Ugh, vulnerable, that means you're weak, you know. That's what I thought. And she wanted me to talk to my little girl, and I had to bring pictures of me as a kid to her house. And thank you. All that stuff, just didn't want to hear about. But I learned. I learned by listening, you know. Just by listening to what you all had to say, that I am entitled to all my feelings. Because my feelings aren't good and bad. What I learned also is I don't have to be my feelings, you know. I don't have to walk around acting out my feelings. I just have them. I've learned that they go away, they come back, they go away, they come back, and so does my hunger sometimes. Sometimes I'm hungry. And I used to think that I was going to die if I didn't... I wasn't able to eat between lunch and dinner. I really thought that was really frightening. And like Colleen, I came in and I ate three binges a day because I was so frightened of the idea of going without food in between my meals. But little by little, I did. And little by little, I just want to mention God for 1 second because that's all I have is a second. I came in and I didn't want to believe in God. I knew you were going to talk about it, but I was that desperate to lose weight, that's why I came in, that I just thought I would sit and listen. And I thought that I could do I could do two steps. I could do the first step. I could do the 12th step because they didn't mention God or he or whatever. And those people who had that serenity, they all had a power greater than themselves in their lives. And I couldn't deny that anymore. So I kind of pretended I believed in God for a while. I heard about that, acting as if. And then I did, and I had one of those experiences where I heard my higher power. And honestly, my life hasn't been the same since. So that's my time. What we're going to do today is we're going to do what I've learned to do, which is use the steps, because any problem I have, all the answers are in here. So, I hate my body, the answers are in here. It's just kind of amazing. I just want to say, I'll just wrap it up with this. I can look at my body today and really have a great appreciation for it. It's strong, it's healthy, and it gets me where I want to go. And sometimes I think it's downright beautiful, honestly. It's all because of everything that I've learned here. So I think that's why I'll leave that for there for now. So thank you for okay. So what we're going to do is I'm going to talk about step six for a minute. And I'm going to use references in some of our literature. Forces of Recovery, I really like that a lot. They take little quotes from our literature, and then I guess people in the fellowship have written about it, but kind of it sings to me. And then the OA 12 and 12, and of course the AA 12 and 12, which is what I was raised on. And I still refer to that. So, step six is, you're new. I should read this verbatim to you because you're new. And some of you are probably new. So step six was, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. So what that means to me, a defect is some behavior of mine that I find objectionable. That's what it says in the big book. By the time that I got to step six, I knew that I wasn't a piece of shit, which I came in believing that. So what that meant for me was, you know, when I first heard about doing inventories, I got really frightened. I got frightened when I heard do anything here for the first time. So I heard inventory, and I thought, inventory. So they're telling me to write down everything that I did wrong in my life, you know, every bad thing I did. So I sat and I thought about it, and I thought, nope, I never did anything bad. Because I couldn't look at myself. It was too scary, you know. It wasn't safe for me to be honest like that. So I did the inventory, I took responsibility for myself, and I saw the freedom that that held for me to be able to say, yes, I am a three-dimensional human being, and I did things that were wrong. What I realized was it didn't mean I was wrong. It means things that I did were wrong. And I once read there's a big differentiation between actions and the actor, you know, or performances and the performer, in that it has nothing to do with show business. Meaning, I can do actions that are wrong and bad. I'm human. I do them. But it doesn't mean that I, as a human being, am a bad person. So by the time I got to step six, now I know that I've got defects of character. And I'm kind of eager now to see how I can get rid of them. And This is what this was a great thing that I read about step six here. This is in Voices of Recovery for January 15th. In a way, we have discovered that humility is simply an awareness of who we really are today and a willingness to become all that we can be. OA has given me a newfound freedom, the freedom that comes as a result of practicing unconditional love and acceptance of the person I am today. In my fourth and fifth steps, I realized what character traits and behaviors had outlived their usefulness in my life. I saw that my old ways of reaching out to the world kept me from reaching my full potential. In step six, I became willing to let go of whatever stood in the way of my being present to life. I am powerless over fixing myself, but I am not helpless. I can pray for the willingness to be willing to surrender and allow the natural progression of change to unfold in God's time. I can even enjoy myself in the process. OA has given me back my power. Today I choose to practice unconditional self-acceptance while I relish in the mystery of change. And, you know, in the AA 12 and 12, step six, in the beginning of step six, somebody says, this is a step that separates the men from the boys. And when I first read that, I thought, well, I would have thought my inventory kind of separated me, you know, from the men from the boys, because I thought that was kind of a daring thing to do. But really, what that did was kind of take ownership of who I was. But now I'm willing to look at all those flaws, those character flaws, those defects, those things that are not helping me today. And in relation to body image, you know, these defects also are about my thoughts that I have about myself. So what else did I want to read to you about step six? I did, here's the goal of step six, okay? A willingness to change is the essence of step six. Change is always frightening. This is from September 19th. Growing and changing is what OA is about. Miracles and spiritual awakenings have come as a result of my slow growth. I wanted to live in the insanity of doing the same things over and over, expecting different results. It was too scary to change. Thank God I stayed around until the miracle happened. Step six was my guide to a willingness to change. I'm grateful that I became willing to surrender to the process. I welcome opportunities for growth and recovery to do things differently. That is change. My program allows me to take care of myself, to grow, improve, work with others, get out of myself, and make a difference in my world. I open myself up each day to God's will for my life. I am willing to go to any length to keep my recovery. Each day I work the steps and use the tools. I live life to the fullest in recovery and refuse to give my life away to my disease. I will always be a compulsive eater, but with my higher power, I have the ability to change. So what I would like you to do now is, you've got your inventory that you just did this morning. You've got your list, and you've read them to people. And I would like you to write down all your defects. And what it says in the the OA 12 and 12 is, each character defect we have today has been useful to us at some point in our lives, and we need to recognize that fact. So what I'd like you to do is make a list of your defects, and then next to each one, what is the benefit that you've gotten from having this defect in your life today? And we'll do that for 15 minutes.
Defects regarding body image or just in general?
Well, the defects that you wrote about this morning. So they should be about your body and other things like that.
Defects that have served?
Yes, how they have served you in your life.